Hello, and welcome to the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. We're happy you're here. On the show, we're certain that you'll relate to the caregiver stories and find comfort with your honorary sisters. Before we start, I want to remind you to go to our website, confessionsofareluctantcaregiver.com, and sign up for our newsletter. We'd love to connect with you on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Twitter, and YouTube. We're sharing tons of useful information that you can use as well as chat with our followers. Now, let's jump right into today's confession. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Natalie.
Good morning, and how are you doing?
Oh, I'm delightful as always.
Oh, well, you know what? We have an awesome guest today, and it's such a unique story.
Yep. Because it's a current event.
It is super current, and it's COVID related. And yeah. This is unique because we have not had any caregivers supporting their loved ones from, or sometimes they don't love them. I mean, I don't want to be judgy, but they're a care recipient. I can see you laughing. So you're like, oh crap, what if we don't love them? No, we'll love them. It's fine. This is such a unique story. And when I saw Carla Yoro, she's nodding. I love you, Carla. We're besties already. When I saw her on Instagram, not only is, I'm going to let you tell about her story. Not only is the person she cared for have COVID and a lot of other dastardly things that came along. COVID affected all of us, but it really affected Carla. And I think this is so important to talk about. So Jay, I want you to tell our friends about
it's
Carla.
It's my turn to talk about Carla. Carla was a caregiver before even this incident with her husband. Carla is a registered nurse, and she's based in Florida. She's my neighbor. For almost a year, she worked the front lines in a COVID unit during the pandemic. Bless you, Carla, and thank you.
God love you. Everyone thanks you.
She and her husband, Daniel, are also Christian ministers, and they hosted a podcast until his health took a turn for the worst. In 2021, Daniel went into multi-organ failure due to COVID. 2 years later, Daniel received his kidney transplant. Carla says she came into caregiving full of enthusiasm and energy.
Don't we all?
Ready to fiercely care for her husband. And we do that. We all are ready and excited. But mental health took a turn for the worse for her. Big impact from caregiving. And what she's learned is that caregiving can be done in a healthy manner as well as an unhealthy manner. And I need to learn about that healthy manner because I'm touch and go, Carla. Yes. It's all about boundaries. Carla, we are so happy to have you here today with us.
I am so excited to be here. And I was telling you guys earlier, I've been listening for a few months and just love the approach that you have to the subject because sometimes it can be a little taboo to say the real things and just really excited to be here.
Oh, that's true. Because caregiving's not easy.
It isn't. So you were an RN. So you're already
already a caregiver.
You're hardcore caregiving and you're on a COVID unit, but so tell us about you, but tell us about what happened on this train ride that you're still on.
Right. So in 2020, we start hearing, I'm working as a registered nurse and a message floor. I've been a nurse for like a year and a half, 2 years. So I'm still new to the profession. I'm already kind of feeling like this is a tough job, way tougher than I think they paint it to us. And, it's not the cute little white dress and the little cap and we're just saving lives. It's a lot. And the nurses have taken on a lot more work in recent years. We've just taken on more. Patients are becoming more acute diseases. People are living longer. So they're having more diseases, more medications. So I was already just toughing it out. And so we start hearing about this virus. My husband and I just got back from vacation and all of a sudden they pull us into our break room one afternoon. We're starting to hear that the cases are getting to our local area of COVID and they pull us into the break room and they're like, hey, you guys are now the COVID unit. If you don't like it, we are not doing transfers. We're not doing anything. I mean, it's just the flu. It's just like a flu. You'll be fine. They gave a surgical mask and said, you're going to be golden. And
oh, so of course, gosh. People,
yes, it was insane. It was no choice. It was like, you're the COVID unit. Now we need to put these patients somewhere. So you're it. And I remember just kind of freaking out. I didn't have any underlying health conditions, but I'm like, am I going to bring this home to family members, to loved ones, my newborn nephew? Like, I was just freaking out.
Yeah.
But we don't get a choice. We're just like, here's your surgical mask. Have fun. You'll do great. This is just like the flu.
Just walk it off. You know, walk it off. Well, and you're young too, because what people can't see. Carla, do you mind if I ask you how old you and your husband are?
I'm 28 and Daniel is 26.
Oh my God. She's a puppy, people. So she's young. So if I were young, when I was 20, you know, 26,
she would have been 25, Natalie.
Yeah. So no, she's a puppy.
You're a puppy. And
she's thinking, I got a great immune system. All right, walk it off. If it's like the flu, keep going. So as nurses, I don't think you really get a choice, right? You just are like,
no,
walk it off.
I mean, we were literally told in nicer terms, but we were literally told this is kind of what you signed up for as a nurse. You sign up to take care of people. Right. However, we were not truly provided. And this is, I mean, across the board, no nurse was really provided the equipment that they needed to be safe because we were told it's just a flu, which of course the first, you know, strands of COVID were absolutely awful.
Right. Yeah.
And so before I know it, by the next week, my coworkers are coming out positive and becoming patients in our unit.
Wow.
And so that in itself was just very traumatic. And so I remember I was training one of the newer nurses on the unit, and she got sick and she became my patient, and I transfer her to the ICU. I'm giving report on her. One day I'm working next to her, and the next day I'm giving report on her because she's about to get intubated. So it was pretty traumatic, all of that. And so before I knew it, I was so burned out, done with all of it. I mean, just watching people doing great one day and within 24 hours they're intubated. It really was insane.
So you knew COVID right up front.
I mean, it took a week or two and people were just deathly ill. Mm. And by then everyone's catching on to, hey, we need more equipment. Cause at first we just had a surgical mask. We were not given shields. We were not given like any protective equipment. It was just a surgical mask, which of course is not an N95 respirator. So people got sick very, very quickly.
So professionally you're there. And then your husband, do Christian ministry full time, or is he also, you know, living his best life at Legoland? Cause I'm saying she lives at Legoland.
No. So he was working full time. We did ministry, you know, part time, you could say. Yeah. And so, you know, we're working both full time. We don't get to stay home like everyone else. He worked at a retail pharmacy. So it's like, we're frontline. And so we're both pretty, you know, burnt out. I remember I was just so ready to quit my job. And so I did in December of 2020 and something I thought I'd never do. I love working at the hospital. And so I switched over to outpatient therapy, you know, or outpatient surgery, thinking, hey, you know, we're safe now. You know, this is better. It's safer. And at the time, Daniel was relatively healthy, but he was overweight, which put him in a very high risk category for COVID.
Gotcha.
And so in 2021, in January, I lose my grandmother to COVID. He lost his grandmother in 2020, and she was in New York City during that first initial crazy wave. Wow. So she passed away at that time as well, like in March of 2020, March, April. So we're already, you know, been very affected with COVID. And so in February, he tests positive. Wow. And I just knew that this was not going to be good because I knew he was high risk despite being healthy otherwise. And I just had this feeling that I knew it was going to be bad. And so we battled it out at home for 9-10 days. I had a fever 9 days straight. And I've never felt pain like that in my body. It was just
insane. You had it too.
So
you
had it too.
Oh yeah. By the way, I had a bad round of COVID.
There was that one time.
Oh yeah. Horrible.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, does it count? Because his was so much worse. No, but I did. So I'm taking care of myself. I'm taking care of him. And he's doing better than I am. So I'm like, I think I'm the one who's going to end up with pneumonia in the hospital. Mm. But 10 days go by and he just wakes up one morning and I noticed he had been sleeping more than usual, but we of course had fevers and stuff like that. But he was sleeping a lot. And so I remember he woke up that morning, he couldn't breathe. And he's like, Carla, I'm a little freaked out. And you know, Daniel does not complain about pain, about anything. He'll tough it out. And so I'm like, I think we need to go into the hospital. And of course, he was freaked out. So his father passed away from cancer. So Daniel was very scared of doctors. You know, one day his father goes into an appointment to check a lump in his neck. And the next thing you know, he's battling cancer for 2 years and loses that battle. So he was very freaked out, very traumatized with doctors. So he just hated the idea of going to the hospital. But I'm like, I'm either calling 911 or I'm driving you. Which way do you want it? And so
I love when the choices are all yours personally. These are my choices.
He tells me all the time, he's like, you gave me no choice, you gave me options, but they're both your choices.
That's exactly right.
Carla works well with children as well. I have 25 years experiences of giving them, are you putting on the red shirt or the green shirt? Notice the shirt is always on. So it's always on, people.
So, it's just an illusion. It's just an illusion, but it works. So, you know, I take him to the hospital and they didn't let me go in, of course. So I'm sitting outside the ER for hours and I couldn't get an update from anyone, which was just some of the worst hours of my life. And finally, I decided to go over to my mom's house to get some sleep until I hear anything. Mm-hmm. And I finally get a hold of the nurse and she tells me, you know, I'm so sorry. No one called you. I was like, what do you mean? No one called me. And she's like, he's intubated. I didn't get to say goodbye, which is a usual practice is, you know, let you have, you know, you get to say goodbye to your loved one and before they go under, especially if it's not like it has to be done right now. So they intubated him because when they ran his labs, his kidneys were completely shut down and his numbers were horrible. I mean, when I went to visit him in the hospital, one of the nurses that was doing dialysis tells me, did he walk in here? I said, yes, I walked him in here. I mean, he wasn't doing great, but I walked him in here. He's like, he shouldn't even have been conscious with these kind of numbers. I mean, he was acidotic. His kidneys have been shut down for quite a while. So it looks like that's the first thing that COVID affected. His pneumonia wasn't too bad, but he was so fluid overloaded. He couldn't even lay flat for them to put the catheter in for dialysis. So they intubated him. And so they started dialysis that night, told me he might not make it through the night, but they were going to try very, very hard. And that led to a 2-week stay on the ventilator, which from the get-go, his pneumonia wasn't bad. But of course, as soon as you get intubated, kind of introduces bacteria and all this stuff. So he did get pneumonia. And before you know it, his kidney shut down and then the ventilator stopped working because the inflammation and all of that was so bad in his lungs. And so then he needed to go on a machine called ECMO, which there was too many people needing ECMO and not enough machines. And this machine is used for lung transplant. So of course they can't use them all up. So basically it put pump oxygen straight into his bloodstream because a ventilator was not enough. And so this led to a 3-month hospital stay. He thankfully walked out with his life, but he walked out with many chronic illnesses that he would go on to struggle with for 2 years, battle for his life multiple times. And then he got, you know, kind of just to culminate everything. Last year, his health took a turn for the worse. It's like right out of the hospital, he was doing great. I quit my job for 7 months to care for him. He needed help walking, bathing. He had to learn how to eat again. He had a trach, so he had to learn how to speak again. I mean, everything he had to learn how to do again. And so I walked with him through all of that for 7 months. And then in 2022, his health took a turn for the worse. His dialysis wasn't working adequately. He almost lost his life. And we were denied for a kidney transplant for almost a year and a half.
Why?
For multiple reasons.
Okay. So,
yes, just like, multiple reasons.
Like, whoa.
Yeah. So basically that to us was kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel. You get a kidney transplant, your health will take a turn for the better. Like that was our light at the end of the tunnel. So he was denied because he was 50 pounds overweight is what they told us initially, even though he lost the weight and then we were still told no. So it was mostly weight loss. So he underwent bariatric surgery to speed up the process because dialysis was really sucking the life out of him and the quality of life wasn't great. Mm-hmm. So he underwent bariatric surgery. And what we came to find out later, but we didn't know in the moment, was that it's also very metabolic surgery. So as he is losing all this weight, his body is producing toxins and he was on PD, which is a type of dialysis that you can do at home. It gives him a better quality of life, but it doesn't clean as well as hemodialysis. So unfortunately, as he's producing all his toxins in his body, losing weight, the dialysis was not cleaning him adequately. And so he became uremic. And so when that happens, I mean, it is life-threatening. And for many months, we couldn't figure out what was going on until we spoke to one of his physicians, and that what was making him sick. He couldn't eat. He couldn't drink water. So he was constantly dehydrated, getting hospitalized because he kept passing out. And I would just catch this 6'2" man as he was passing out. So
you do seem short. Even on camera.
I am 5'2".
I want the minutes to reflect that she does seem short even She's on camera. She's she is vertically challenged. So 5'2" and he's 6'2". So that's a right. That's I mean, at least you can wear heels. I mean, let's just call that for what that is.
So I'm just like this has gone on for multiple years, and he is very young. Like he's by 25, right. 26 at this point. But he does finally get approved for a kidney transplant. Did you just get the kidney transplant then?
Yes. So he gets approved in January of this year. And so, it was intense. It was an intense battle. And of course, calling insurance companies and dealing with all of that was a full-time job in and of itself. But he gets approved in January, and we get the call in April, which was extremely life-changing. He gets his transplant. And then after 2 weeks, he starts to reject his transplant.
Of course.
And that turned into multiple hospital stays, time off from work, just very stressful. But thankfully, he's doing great today. They were able to fight the rejection, and the kidney is working well.
So I say this respectfully. So that was his story. That was his story in like 5 minutes. Like, wow. That's like, but you know what? The sad part is that sounds like a lot. It's not to minimize it. It sounds like a lot of COVID related, like complications, post COVID complications. And like, we don't hear them. Notice that COVID's not in the news anymore. We don't even talk about, you know, how the frequency of COVID, because I mean, there's a lot of other very more interesting, I'm sure, quote unquote, nobody can see me do the quotes. We don't talk about COVID anymore. Although COVID is still very real. It's still very much out there, but I feel like we know more about it, and we've got all kinds. I feel like I need to say, and Paxlovid, I've seen those commercials like 100 times, and I'm like, okay, you're welcome, Paxlovid. You can promote us. And, let's talk about you. Let's go back, and because you said, number one, you were a paid caregiver, i.e. nurse. And so did you have any caregiving in your background before you became a nurse? What made you kind of want to be, because that's caring for other people paid. And I'm sure you just said, let's go into nursing for the money. Like, nobody does that. They have a heart for it. So did you have like, did something like say, oh, I want to serve others? Cause that's what caregiving is a servant heart.
Absolutely. So I didn't have any caregiving background whatsoever. There are no nurses in my family. There are no people necessarily in my family that have struggled with health conditions that I've been part of that.
Healthy people.
Yeah. Like, I really went into it because that caregiving and serving aspect of it has always called my attention. I love that. I love serving people. I love hosting people in our home. I'm the caregiver in the home. You know, I take care of people. And so it was such a natural fit for me.
Okay.
So I think because I expected it to be such a natural thing, I didn't expect how taxing it would be. And so I went into it just I'm going to be a nurse. I'm going to take care of people. But it really sucks the life out of you. And I just didn't expect that because it was such a natural fit of a career for me. I just went into it out of passion. I wanted to use it as in mission work as well.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Well, I guess for me, I would always think, and of course, I can't stand the sight of blood, Carla. So that's important.
JJ passes out a lot, Carla.
I could never be a nurse.
A lot.
But for me, I'm a caregiver. I have that heart. I love to take care of people. I'm the one that likes to host in my home, but it's a happy event. Like, I take care of you and you should be appreciative, and everyone leaves happy. Everyone leaves healthy. Right. And that maybe is, you're not getting that because people are not happy, and that's mm-mm. okay. You're sick and you are mean sometimes. And you know, you may be leaving the hospital, but you're not in the best of health. And obviously that happened with you, but also you're taking that person home with you.
Yeah.
And you've only been married for, at that time, a year and a half, less than 2 years. You're thinking, maybe I shouldn't have got married.
You know, you said sickness and health, but that's not funny. Like when sickness is more than health.
Lord, you tested me. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. And like, that's the thing about nursing. So I kind of thought that it would be the same, right?
Yeah.
But the thing about nursing is I did my 3 12-hour shifts and I got 4 days off and I got time to recover.
Mm.
And trust me, I recovered well. I mean, I was getting pedicures and manicures. Like, I learned like extreme self-care is the way to get through this. And even then, I mean, the emotional side of nursing is very, very tough. I did not expect the trauma at the level that I got it. But I take that into like, oh, you know, they ask me, you know, do you want to take your, you know, should your husband go to a rehab facility and all this? I'm like, I'm taking him home. Are you kidding me? He's going to do therapy at home. They even asked me, you know, where can we put a hospital bed? I said, the heck, you're going to put a hospital bed in my house. You better get him walking. You know, I really vouched for him and like really, I mean, I was there every single step of the way. I was there every day at the hospital. Like I said, I didn't work for 7 months, which looking back, I don't think that was healthy at all.
No.
But it's just, I really want it to be there. And I think that also, I mean, my inexperience, like little did I know what would come months later when all of a sudden I just came off that adrenaline high and I just crashed. It was really an adrenaline high. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can do this. I can do this. And then after having him home for months and I'm realizing, oh wait, he can't drive. So I'm driving. Oh, he can't do groceries. I'm doing groceries. Oh wait, he can't clean. I'm cleaning the house. I'm mentally taking care of all the bills, taking care of running the home, making sure that his appointments are done, making sure that insurance is covering this and that, which in and of itself could be a full-time job. It is a lot of work. And so it's almost like I came off the adrenaline high and the truth sank in that he's not going to recover as quickly as I thought he would. You know, he's not getting back to work for a very long time. He is not the same man that I married. He is a new version of him.
Yep.
And I think people get a little bit taken aback when I say that, but he's not the person I married. He's a different version now. I love him just the same. But there is like a moment where you really need to accept that things are different now. And I think when that moment came for me, depression really set in because I didn't like my new reality. And again, that's like a tough thing to say, but there comes a moment when you had to accept the reality and that you need help and that you can't manage everything on your own. And that was depressing for me. I'm very independent, very driven, like to do things myself. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, he's the one who's dependent on me, but why do I feel like I can't be independent either? Like I can't manage my own life. So that piece of it was also very tough.
Man. I mean, you lost your identity. You became, you're like, I'm taking care of Daniel. And that's what I do because I hear
person.
You saying, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, they obviously like most caregivers, you must win the lottery because you've got to leave your job. So income is definitely, there's always that financial burden and that worry. You're fighting for insurance claims. And to this day, you know, I heard you say, you know, you're taking care of, you know, the time you have to take off of the kidney transplant. So you're working for someone, but are you taking FMLA or how are you managing?
Yeah. How did you kind of quit or did you just literally quit? And then how did you financially afford to do
that? I mean, for a while he had short-term disability. So that kept us going. And then, you know, back in the day at the, you know, 2020, 2021,
right.
Insurance, I mean, companies like, you know, like our loans for our cars and our home, like you could defer that for 3 yeah. months. And so that's how we survived for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people had to eventually start donating to us. So like churches donated to us, which is just a testimony in and of itself. We got $20,000 of a GoFundMe, which was wow. incredible, but we would yeah. not have survived. Like we would yeah. have, like our home would have gone into foreclosure. Because that too, like I would go to work, and even though I was working in outpatient surgery, because I did at some point while he was like in rehab, I did try to go back to work, and I literally had to smile the whole shift because you really are doing a lot of customer service when you're taking care of your patients. Plus, like, you know, I can't let my coworkers see, you know, they knew what was going on, of course, and they were amazing and supportive. They were incredible. But at the same time, it's like, you can't really show what's going on because I have to take care of others right now. And I remember I worked 3 shifts and then I went back to my, I had a great boss. She was very understanding, but I was like, I'm not going to be back.
Yeah.
I'm not coming back for a while.
I would be cracking. Like I've done that before where you put the smile on all day and then you get in your car, Carla, and you're like, okay, I have to go home, but you're sobbing. Like,
well, I had never struggled with panic attacks in my life. Yeah. And I remember after working my first few shifts, I came home with panic attacks and I had a panic attack all the way from work to my house through taking a shower and getting in bed. I'm still having a panic attack. It was horrible. I'm like, I can't fake it, you know? And I have people in my life telling me to, like, how are you doing financially? You know, are you going to get back to work? I couldn't. I mean, I felt just as broken and disabled as he was. Like I could yeah. not function. Yeah. And I think it's very interesting to manage people's expectations of how you should be reacting during seasons like this.
Yeah.
Especially with him being in the ICU, you know, like you mentioned, you know, we get all the opinions and all people telling all kinds of things.
So helpful.
And so incredibly helpful. And so, you know, sometimes people would tell me, but what about your finances? And I'm here going, you know, screw the house. He might not make it, you know,
right.
It's a very intense moment. And some people expect you to be crying, but you're smiling. Some people expect you to be smiling, right? Because you're a person of faith and you're supposed to look perfect and you're breaking down. It's very hard. I mean, the panic attacks too came, I think, from managing people's expectations when I should have just been like, screw it. This is my story and I'm going through this. And if you can't handle crazy Carla right now and grieving Carla right now, deal with it. Now it took me years to come to that conclusion because I did manage people's expectations of my reactions. Yeah. So that piece of it too, I mean, brought on a lot of anxiety and depression with it because I needed to understand right now, all I needed to manage was myself and my husband. But I was so tied to people's opinions of me and like with how good of a caregiver I was.
Oh, Carla.
That for so long. Oh my gosh. I struggled with anxiety for so long because I wanted to be this perfect caregiver. And it's so funny because Daniel didn't expect that of me. He became my therapist on the side. Let me tell you, he is such a calm person and he had a great attitude through this. Like, I mean, I can count in my 10 fingers how many times he's cried through all of this because he really is, it is what it is kind of person. And I think that comes from what he went through with his father. He learned through that experience and it really prepared him for this crisis. But I had never gone through something this tough. I mean, not even close to it. And so he was very level-headed and very accepting of reality. I'm a very idealistic person. So I didn't accept things as they were, like, oh, insurance denied this. I said, the heck they did. So I would call everybody and anybody. And, you know, and it came to a point where he's like, stop fighting so much. You know, it is what it is. If it's not the end of the world, it is what it is. And, you know, I think that's not a terrible attitude to have sometimes. Like, it is what it is. This is reality.
You know, you said stop fighting. You know, this resonates with me. It speaks to me so much because it's so many things you've said, actually. I'm like, gosh, I feel like you're a younger version of me because I am just a fierce advocate. And so when Jason got diagnosed, it was like, I went into this mode. I'm like, we're going to cure this. We're going to do this. I don't even think I asked him if he was going to do this. I'm like, we're going to do this. And I'm dragging you along with me. I mean, right. Of course he wanted to be well, but then it was like, oh, you're right. You're on the almost like, I talk about this. You're almost on this bipolar high, this manic phase. And you're right. When you crashed and I crashed and I hadn't even, the crash is the right word. I hadn't really put a name to it. But I talk about it in earlier episodes about like, I came back and I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me.
Like I was not okay. And I had been totally fine in this chaos. And I had, my body had to become so normalized to the chaos that when it slowed down, I didn't know what to do. I couldn't think. I was not using the prefrontal cortex. I was just surviving and I wasn't okay. I just wasn't okay. And even, you know, with Mom Jay, thinking about even what happened yesterday, like when you called and you were so upset, like, well, actually the day before yesterday, we had an issue.
Every day.
JJ called and she's crying and, you know, they thought our mom, this is crazy, Carla. They thought our mom was dead from the pension and they turned off her insurance. And so our mom has, you know, a medication that basically keeps her not alive, but alive and gives her some ounce of normalcy. This medication does. And they're like, well, I mean, it's $20,000 a month, the shelf price.
They told me that I should pay that out of pocket. They would refund me, Carla.
We'll just reimburse you in 2 weeks.
It could take three because Medicare is a little slow getting it back on.
They're touch, I swear slow. To
you. So there you go. But that is all. That's the advocacy right there. So
it's a snot sandwich from JJ.
That was a snot sandwich for me. But that's when I call Natalie because sometimes, you know, the it is what it is thing that couldn't work for me because I was like, my mom's out of medicine on Sunday. So somebody's got to call.
See, I love when people get suggestions like that, especially people from these insurance companies. Out of pocket, we'll reimburse you. I don't have 20K sitting around. Do
no.
you? I mean, what do you think I do for a living? You know, and it's so funny because, I mean, just like you said, you are in survival mode. And people, I think, sometimes think that caregiving is, oh, I just make a cute little plate of food and serve it. Caregiving is way more than that. I mean, you become the case manager. You're the interpersonal liaison person between everybody. And this doctor prescribes something that interacts with what this doctor prescribed. And you're like, excuse. And I think me being a nurse was such a blessing. I mean, if I could say, this is why I became a nurse, I think this is it. Like, he would be prescribed things. I would be fighting nurses and doctors. I'm like, what do you mean you prescribe this? The cardiologist said this. So it was intense. And it's really a survival mode. And I mean, I remember like he was on Eliquis, right? He had blood clots because of catheters and COVID causes clots as well. So, and he's still struggling with that till today. And so all of a sudden he's taking Eliquis, no issues with it. And you know, we go to Walgreens to pick it up. Nope, not covered anymore. I'm like, what do you mean it's not covered anymore? He's been getting it for months. And so they're like, no, it needs to be authorized, blah, blah, blah. Well, I call and call around and call around. Well, it's $1,500. They're like, just, you know, we're like, okay, well, I can't afford that monthly. You know, that's a mortgage payment. Like, I can't do that. And so, you know, you get all kinds of like stupid answers, to be honest with you. And I think, and that's then, you know, the you
answer.
Call.
Stupid yeah. answers. Stupid.
They are about common sense. Answers. I want to say, I tell you what, why don't you pay for it and pay me back? Could you do it?
Right.
So I'm just curious because we talk about healthy and unhealthy. So you mentioned one of my favorite words and it's boundaries, and they're boundaries for yourself.
Yep.
Because there were issues that you talked about, not feeling like you wanted to make sure that other people's opinions were met. Carla's like my soul sister, Natalie. She can be aggressive for you, but she's my soul sister here.
Yeah.
So first of all, moving past that of saying, forget it, I don't care what you think, but how are you going forward? Like you can say that, but you said that you openly said, hey, I had to get some counseling. I had to go get some help. So
yeah. So I suck at boundaries. I mean, just before all of this, I just suck at boundaries because I am a people pleaser at heart, you know? Oh my gosh. Like I will take inventory of everyone's opinions. And I'm like, how can I meet everyone's like, and then it's so funny because my husband's like, are you insane? No one can do that. But it makes so much sense in my head. I can please everyone. Just watch me. And, during the worst of this, I sometimes even felt like I had to please everyone because if not, they wouldn't help me, which is so backwards to think that. But it's again, like now that I'm on the brighter side of things, I'm looking back and I'm saying, wow, I had some twisted ways of thinking. Like in your survival mode, I mean, just getting up in the morning is a victory sometimes.
That's exactly right.
Right. And so I would say that back then I didn't have boundaries in terms of like standing up for myself when I was told something that was completely inappropriate or when I was told something hurtful, not saying, hey, you've hurt me, so I'm going to step back unless you're willing to change that behavior. And so I was just terrible at speaking up for myself. I could advocate to death, you know, for Daniel. I would take bullets for him. I would talk to who I needed to talk to. But when it came to, for me, advocating for me, I was terrible at it. And so I let people's opinions of me affect me. I would make decisions based on what people could possibly think about it, you know, people close to me. Moving forward now, I make decisions based on what's healthier for me and for us. You know, if someone thinks that, you know, me doing something is dumb or silly or doesn't make sense to them, I'm like, well, this trip means a lot to me. Like, for example, Daniel, we traveled while he was on dialysis, and that was an adventure in and of itself. I mean, he had a huge dialysis machine, not to mention we have to travel with this, most of the supplies. Right. You know, they will send some over to where we're staying, to our hotel or whatever, but they won't send everything. So we had to travel with multiple suitcases of supplies. And sometimes I would have people, you know, look at me and be like, well, why are you doing that? And like, because we need to live. We need some quality of life. And so there was moments I'm like, I'm going to start challenging what people say we cannot do, obviously safely, but that was one way that I was like, I am breaking up with other people's opinions. And I'm setting boundaries of like, no, we don't want this. We need this. This is helping us look forward to something. When we don't know if Daniel's going to make it to tomorrow, we need to have something to look forward to that isn't horrible, isn't a surgery, isn't a procedure. We need something else to look forward to. And so now it's more like, no, we do what's best for us. We love everyone. We appreciate opinions and advice, and we seek it as well. But now we do what's best for us. And we feel freer, you know, we freed ourselves of others' expectations. And we right now, we do what God wants from us and what makes us happy and what makes us healthy.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
I love the Carla's, breaking up with people's opinions.
Yeah. Carla also is getting the first ticket on.
That's a good title for a book.
Yeah.
Carla's coming with us on the caregiver cruise, Norwegian.
Yeah. Because I like her attitude. She was like, you know, 100%. You've got to take care of yourself, even in the worst crisis. I know even for mom and Emily, when it was hard for them to get out, Emily would say, you know, we've got to go. The Carm store is like a Goodwill in their area. And Emily would say, if we just have to go there. I know it doesn't make sense. And people would say, well, your mom's a fall risk, or you really shouldn't take her out. And Emily was like, we are going to the store. You know, we're going to do a little shopping. And it was Emily's choice. And that was perfectly fine. Natalie and I were like, go for it. Go do it.
Oh, yeah. So, we're totally supportive. I'm like, get the wheelchair, girl, and just go.
And just, you know,
I do think it's in go. There's so many things, like, you know, I think God prepared you for this. I think, and it's interesting that he was like, all right, I'm going to give you this. I'm going to get you ready for this. It's almost like, I hate to call it a battle, because we think about the words that we use. It's I'm going to get you ready for this chapter of your life, and you're going to take it and you're going to climb that mountain. I'm going to tell you, I felt like, I really did visualize a mountain with Jason's treatment. And I would think, okay, we're at the top. And then when we came home, I thought, oh, we're going back down. So we're getting ready to go into the flatlands. No,
no, no. And so I think you're right. When you said the illness and whatever illness it is, whatever the event is, it changed your husband. It changed mine. Yeah. And here's the crazier part. It changed me too. And I mean, Carla, I quit my job. I quit my job 6 months after I got home, and people would have been like, you're the CEO of a company in Virginia. And I'm like, yep, sure did. Because I was different. I was different. And I think God sets us up so that we can, I fully believe it's not so to tear us down, although I needed to be torn down a touch. Slow my roll. And so that he can build you back up the way that serves him. And I think God's given you some insight so that you can go and tell your story so that it helps someone else. Because there's so many things. I'm like breaking up with other people's opinion. I'm a recovering people pleaser. Same here. We changed, but I'm okay with that. I think once you accept the change, your new normal, you realize this is going to be okay. It's that acceptance. I appreciate your husband saying, stop fighting it. Because I think when you accept it is really when you, in that acceptance is when you find peace. So.
It's good. And I love what you said. It's like a mountain, because I think I approach caregiving like a race. How quickly do I get you from sick to healthy? And so I'm running. And it gets to a point where like, well, this is a marathon and this could go on for a very long time. What you're doing is not sustainable. And so when you said that, it really clicked that for me, because I think I approach caregiving, so I can fix this. I can totally fix this. Like, I got you. I got the experience. I know what medications you need. I got you. It's so funny because Daniel's first appointment with his primary right out of the hospital, you know, it was a brand new primary doctor. And so I walk in there and I had a list of things. And it's so funny because he asked me, well, what do you need from me? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Do you not see his history? And he came out with, left foot drop from being in the bed for so long. So his left foot was completely paralyzed. So he was wheelchair bound. He needed a brace. He had a blood clots in his retina, and in optic nerve stroke, he's lost eyesight in his left eye. So wow. He couldn't drive. So we needed a neurologist consult. We needed this. And I came with a list of things that we needed. It was hilarious. My husband walked out and he was like, who was a doctor in this scenario? But, you know, I approached everything with like, I can fix this. This is what he needs. And then it got to a point where I didn't have a fix anymore, because he was so sick that there really wasn't an answer other than he needs a transplant yesterday. And I can't do anything about that. He's on the list. There's nothing I can do. I can't control that. And so I had to accept what I couldn't control. I mean, I even we had conversations. I remember having these conversations at, you know, in the bed at night of, Daniel, if you don't make it, what do we do? What do you want me to do with your body? What do we do? Those conversations will change your brain chemistry. Like, they will, at such an early stage in our lives, of course. So I remember having those conversations and like accepting that things could get better, but they could also go the completely wrong way. That was a life-changing moment for me. I did not do it perfectly. It wasn't like a one day that I was like, oh, everything works out. Great. It doesn't work out. Great. No, it was months of talking things over with him and him saying, you know, because when he lost his father, you know, there was many people too that were like, no, he's going to make it. But he didn't. And he said, I had to accept that. And that was a moment that things changed for me when, you know, I had to learn that I couldn't cover it up eating food. I couldn't cover it up, you know, in relationships. I had to just do a complete stop and face myself. And that's so funny too, because I'm like, I did nothing wrong, yet I had to face myself and fix things. Because I think that caregiving feels very unfair sometimes as well.
Yes. Oh yeah.
And I'm like, why do I have to go through this like whole journey of like figuring out things in myself and fixing things in myself? I'm like, I didn't do anything wrong. Why do I feel like I'm being punished?
Yeah.
But now on the other side of things, I'm like, I am such a different person and I'm a better person.
Yep.
Not because I'm more compassionate, not because I'm more loving, because people think that's what happens with caregiving. No, you have more boundaries. You become a little bit more cutthroat. You say no a whole lot more than you say yes.
Yep.
And you learn to put yourself first, but not because you're mean, but because people don't get a good version of you when you're spent and burnt out.
That's the money right there. People don't get the good version of you when you're burned out.
No. No, I was an awful person through most of this. That's why people congratulate me for being such a good caregiving. I'm like, I was a mess. I yelled at people. I threw way more, glassware than I would like to admit at the wall. There was one time where Danny and I just lost it and we threw a few things around the house because we were frustrated with the situation and it's so much is out of your control. I was not a great person. When people congratulate me, I was like, I was not very nice, you know? I've grown because I did so much wrong that I had to call myself on.
Do you think, I hear you, I love the throwing glasses. I'm all kinds of,
you know what, there's, I will tell you, actually there is an intervention, a therapeutic intervention where there, you will break glass. There are places you can go where you go and you physically, it's the noise, it's the audible noise of the breaking that is so therapeutic. And I can tell you, I never made Jason's food. And in my mind, when Jason got sick, I'm like, I'm going to learn to cook. And anybody who knows me knows she can't cook. Like I had cream, I can make cream of wheat and eggs and Cheerios with milk in it. And so, but we ordered his food because I couldn't handle the rejection of the food and me being attached to that rejection. So we would order his food and we lived on the 14th floor. And when I threw the food away, because we threw it away every time, there was nothing that tasted good. And it was never going to taste good. You never had a chance food. Sorry. And I would throw it down the chute and I would hear it hit the sides and it would be like, boom, 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 boom. It brought me such a level of joy to say, like, throwing you away, don't even care about you.
Yeah. There's, you have to release that some way, or, you know, and like for me, I would go on walks and I would just start running. I'm not a fit person. I'll start running. Like I had to get it out. And I would call, people and vent. I'm like, I feel so sorry for them. I probably just drew them crazy because one day I was happy and one day I wanted to kill somebody. It's just so much emotion that you're going through and it's hard to filter it. It just comes out in these like outbursts. And people never know what version they're going to get of you that day. And it's hard to find people that are willing to even walk along with you through that because again, call me and I might be happy that day, or you might call me and get a whole lot of sass. You don't know what you're going to get today.
Yeah.
And I know that's hard for people, but like, if I could say anything to someone walking alongside a caregiver is it might be a little bit rocky. You might get different versions of that person, but they're still the person you love. That's just how crisis is. There's sometimes big waves or storms, and then sometimes it gets calm and then sometimes it gets bad again. It's a journey.
Mm, it is. It is. Mm, so you said you guys, threw the dishes together. This is interesting.
Yeah.
Did you ever throw the dishes at one another? Was there ever a moment
you wanted to kill him?
I will not confirm nor deny. Listen, I have a funny story because he used a walker for a very long time, right? He graduated from the wheelchair, went to the walker, then went to the scooter. Like he had so many stages, but the walker stage was really funny because he kind of used it as his weapon. And so not against me, but there was one time where I got frustrated because his memory also took a big hit. His brain was depleted of oxygen. And so unfortunately, his memory is not what it used to be. And so I have to repeat things to him. We found systems now, like I have a whiteboard and that's his brain. We call it the brain because literally if it's not on the whiteboard, he doesn't remember it.
Right.
So one day I just got onto him about his memory or something like, why can't you just remember what I told you? And he literally just threw the walker across the kitchen. And it's so funny because those things are meant to not fall. And so the walker just went, bloop, 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 bloop. I just stood standing there. It did nothing. And he got even more angry. It was hilarious. We laughed about it later, but it was definitely moments where we needed to get those emotions out. And I'm just so grateful for the relationship that we have. We forgive each other in 5 minutes. It's perfect.
Here's the thing. You have to. There is no, you cannot hold a grudge. You cannot be mad. And I mean, there are times that Jason and I would say, nobody would think that you would argue with each other during, cancer or any complex health issue. And then you do, because the stress of it, it's exactly what you said. It's like, you're so on this, your stress response system is so ready. Like, it's almost like you're ready to respond. And the problem is that like, you could take something that in your normal life, a statement would never bother you. And all of a sudden, it's like amplified to the millionth degree. And you're like, wow. And then you're all like, ooh, crap. Sorry about that. Sorry about that.
Yeah. My capacity was so tiny. It was minuscule. I mean, and going back to the food piece, like he went through a time after his bariatric surgery where he would throw everything up. He couldn't even drink water. And so I would cook and he wouldn't eat it, or he would throw it up. I mean, talk about hurt feelings. I'm like, how dare he throw up my food? It wasn't personal, but you take everything very personal when you're going through stuff like that. And so I remember, I'm like, I'm done cooking.
Yeah.
Like, just like you said, you know, okay, if it's really that big a deal, we'll just do takeout, you know, we'll get you a soup from Panera, whatever, you know,
that's absolutely it. Because I don't want the rejection. Cause that's the thing, no matter how much, like when you're in the front brain, you're like, oh, I know that he's not rejecting me, but I am putting all this effort into food. I don't care if it tastes good or bad. And boom, you've gotten me. So I know. And oh man, Jay, I feel like we need Carla to come back.
I know. Oh my gosh. She's like so much joy. I'm like, is it like my turn? Is it time? Sister. Are we out of time? Do I get?
Oh gosh. Yes, man. We are really getting close, Carla. Okay. And we love you. And we're going to come like live next to you at Legoland. So it's time for sister questions. I'm sorry to cut you off on this because I feel like there's so much more. And so I feel like Carla's coming back. So Jay.
Yes.
It's time for sister questions with Carla.
Yes.
Okay. Do your question.
Okay. So mine, I think, is easy.
Oh, okay.
I think. Okay. So Carla is, I love that you said, don't care what anybody says. We will pack 1,000 suitcases. We are going somewhere because nobody knows what tomorrow brings. We got to live life today. What's a favorite place for you and Daniel?
Oh, good one. Good question.
Whoa. So
a favorite trip.
We have only been on one cruise and it was on our honeymoon. And we've been trying to redeem that cruise because I booked it kind of late. And so we had a smaller ship and, you know, they can be kind of party ships and stuff. So we're like, but we still had an amazing time. So we've been wanting to go on a cruise for forever, but it's not really doable on dialysis, even though there are cruise ships that literally are for dialysis patients. But we couldn't, you know, afford to plan all of that out. So I would say cruises, because you don't really have to think about much of anything. So if you want to rest, just go on a cruise. You don't have to worry about food, transportation.
More question. So why aren't they okay for dialysis? I'm just curious. They don't have the medical hookups or?
So there are cruise ships that, they don't have medical hookups, but also like there are some cruise ships, like companies that are specifically for dialysis patients, which I think is really cool, also not super conducive to dialysis because he got hospitalized a lot during dialysis, would pass out a lot. So, I mean, if you're in your early stages of dialysis, maybe, especially if you're doing like peritoneal dialysis, which is dialysis that you can do at home. I think it's the safer option, but if you're doing hemodialysis, like I wouldn't recommend it just because if something were to happen, you can't really
evacuated.
Quickly, but.
I mean, I'm planning my dialysis cruise now. I'm like, let's go. Let's get a whole medical team.
Yeah. As long as we're stable, but you know, I just keep thinking, I'm like, oh, David, I'm going to call you. Cause we've got some friends at Norwegian that we're working on. So just know.
Caregiver cruise. You could be our first ticket,
you could be a part of our caregiver cruise because we are all about getting on a cruise ship because exactly that reason, it's that you don't have to think. Okay. So, okay.
Ready.
I got 1 minute. Carla, what is your favorite guilty pleasure? Just for you, girl.
Chocolate. Oh my God. The Ferreros are so good. I love it. And Ferreros? Daniel will buy me like the pack that brings like 12. And I'm like, you're crazy.
Love it.
I love them. They're so good.
Okay. That is hilarious. And you know what? They are. They are ridiculous. They're good. Ferrero. You can sponsor this podcast as well.
They're addicting. Oh my gosh.
Oh, they are. Here's a question. Do you share them? Because I'm going to tell you, there's some things I don't share with Jason.
Well, here's the thing. When Daniel was on dialysis, he couldn't have chocolate. Awesome. So I was like, it has too much phosphorus. Cut it down.
I'm so sorry. That is awkward.
I can't say that now, but
for your health, you cannot have this. Oh, I like it, Carla. I like your attitude.
Yeah.
Carla, thank you so much for coming and being with us today. I have a feeling Carla's going to come back just because she was so much darn fun.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And there's so much.
I love this.
So
much fun.
Oh, you have so much wisdom, nuggets of wisdom in your young life. And, you know, I thank you so much for being your most authentic self because it's hard to say I was not kind all the time. And honestly, if you can hold your opinions to yourself at times. Thank you.
Yeah. And it feels good to say it out loud also, because there's moments where you have to forgive yourself and say, you know, I know it wasn't nice, but I can forgive myself. It is what it is. I was going through it. So it is therapeutic to have these conversations and just say it like it is, because it's the truth.
Be honest. Oh man. So, oh yeah, you're totally coming back. We're just going to come back and have fun. Hey, you know what? Maybe the next time you come back, we'll do it from the cruise ship. So that would be the coolest podcast, is we'll do it live from the cruise ship. So
that's our goal, Carla. Everybody's got goals.
That's our goal. Everybody, thanks so much for listening in. And thank you, Carla, for being your authentic self, and send our love to your husband. We'll keep you in our prayers for continued health and for sanity, mostly sanity. So thanks,
thank you
everybody,
so much
for listening in.
Bye.
All right. Thanks.